Hi, everyone. Welcome to Better Together, an As We podcast. For future reference, As We, as in A-S-W-E, stands for the Alzheimer's Society of Windsor and Essex County. This podcast will feature engaging conversations with guests ranging from community leaders to care partners and persons living with dementia to raise awareness about this disease. You're listening to Better Together, an As We podcast, and this is episode 28. My name is Cindy, and I'm joined today by Lisa Doig. Lisa Doig is a care partner, and her situation is a very unique one. Thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start off this podcast with explaining the unique situation that you're in.
When my dear mom died in 2019, my dad, who'd had vascular dementia for many years, and I'd been taking him to his appointments and doctor's appointments and taking care of him for probably 10 years at that point. And he escalated in his dementia and ended up, I had to move in with him and take a leave from work. And ultimately, he moved into a retirement home. And then COVID hit. And then my husband was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's, which is now not referred to as early onset, but they have a new term for it that I can't recall right now. So he had early onset dementia. My dad was in the retirement home when COVID started to hit. Then when I realized what was going on with my husband, I retired from my job, and I was working with people with advanced dementias. That was my career.
Already,
I was doing that for about 25 or 30 years, doing music therapy with advanced dementia. When they told us we could not visit our dad, we said, no, no, no. And we pulled him out. And he came to live with me. Mm-hmm. So I had the two of them. It was like living with Abbott and Costello because they're so funny. They have no short-term memory. They're very kind and polite and witty. They've both been funny all their lives, yeah. You know, crack people up. So we did about a year and a half like that. And then my dad didn't know where he was anymore. And he'd be eloping, trying to run away. And Michael would be in bed. And so I just said to my brother at one point, I can't keep them safe anymore. So now my dad's living in a secure unit and I'm just have my husband at home now. And actually they're both in the men's club day program together, and they have been for a couple of years. They're very, very close.
Yeah.
And we had some really awesome times with my dad living there, but it was pretty tough.
Yeah. And while your dad was living at home with you, it was just you during COVID.
Yeah.
Caring for the both of them.
Yeah.
Wow.
I did hire a lot of caregivers to come in and help me. I was actually like just hiring people like PSWs, a lot of them that were out of work or for whatever reason. My brother Derek would come every Wednesday and he would make dinner and hang out with dad for it. So, you know, I had some help here and there, but it was mostly me. Yeah.
What did you take from that experience?
It gives you a real anything goes kind of attitude. I don't have any high expectations of anything. It's living in the moment. Mm-hmm. Nothing really bothered me anymore. One day I dropped a whole pitcher of water on the floor and it went everywhere. And I just looked at it and went, oh, well, you know, like clean it up. I don't know. It was just, they live so much in the moment and love so much of each moment, and they draw you into that, you know, and you really start to, you get a little odd because you're not in tune with the rest of the world because you're living with these two fellows that have advanced dementia, and it takes you right outside of rules and regulations and, you know, protocol. And I mean, not that they ever did anything rude or anything. They were just themselves.
Mm-hmm. That reminded me of that quote people say, c'est la vie.
Yeah.
I don't know why that just popped in my head when you were mentioning that. So while you were caring for your husband and your dad during COVID, how did you become more involved with the Alzheimer's Society?
They were going to the day programs, and I immediately was involved with getting involved in a support group. Which was a lifesaver, yeah. I have to say, like with a lot of people, when you start the support groups, it's scary. And I know a lot of people kind of backpedal when they first start out. Mm-hmm. So I'm just thinking about people that have a family member newly diagnosed that tries a support group. Don't backpedal too quickly. You know, a lot of people think for whatever reason, my life's not hard enough yet. I don't belong here. You belong, you know. So it's, but that was a real lifesaver for me. And my perspective of the support groups changed a lot over the year, the first year. And it became sort of from, it was a little intimidating. I was shy. I was whatever. And then it became my, oh, goody, I can't wait, you know, like just to see everybody again, right? So, yeah. And so that was, I'd been involved with the Alzheimer's Society through my whole career because we always did fundraising for them and all that, you know, before and because of my residence and stuff. But I really got involved and got to see the really good work they're doing in the community.
With the support group, did you do any other programs as well? Did you do any of the like First Link learning series or?
No. I specialized in advanced dementia. I didn't, you know, I didn't take any further education, but Michael now goes to the Monday day program.
Yeah.
I would like to go to some of the other programs they have set up, like the coffee thing.
Memory Cafe.
Cafe. Yeah, but we haven't done that yet, so.
And you have a lot on your plate, so I understand why.
We're so busy. I know. Like, it's just, especially when Dad was living with me, I was always taking somebody somewhere, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Michael had 3 or 4 surgeries in that first year or two, and it was, it's been really busy. It's still really busy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've sat and had a cup of coffee and just had a cup of coffee in the morning without doing something else at the same time in months, you know? So, but it's okay. Like we're doing okay.
What was the diagnosis process for you like with your husband?
Oh yeah, that was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be because I worked with people with dementia and I actually, when I was in Calgary, I had an open practice. I had brain injured and autistic and all kinds of people that I was, seeing. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved back here, back to Windsor, I streamlined into dementias because I could see right away that music had a really powerful, significant impact on the person with dementia and the family. I was taking the whole family along for the ride on everything I did. Mm-hmm. I'd involve them in ways to communicate with their loved one. I'd bring them in to watch a session, like from a distance, and I would give them tips and things like that. And I always got so close to them that I can't tell you how many funerals I sang at. I can't tell you how close I got to how many people I became like a part of the family because music does that. It's a bond, you know? It was so enriching for me to see the huge impact that music could have to help the family as a whole with their loved one, you know, in their last days, years, whatever, that I streamlined into just doing music therapy with dementia. And it was like a calling for me or something. And I love it. I never get tired. I still do it at my dad's home. I go up there and my dad sings with me and it's pretty powerful.
Yeah. Did you do one-on-one sessions or was it group?
It depended. Like I was a contract music therapist most of the time.
Okay.
So people would hire me to go into a home and see their loved one. And I built most of my practice on that. I had 2 hospital contracts and 1 day program for a handicap. But most of my client base were people that hired me to go and see in homes and hospitals all over.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you were busy, eh?
Yeah, it was great though. I'd never had an indoor job till I started doing music therapy. So it was a good way to break into an indoor job, going from place to place and, you know, singing and, you know, always being really active. So
what were you doing before this?
I was a horse trainer.
Oh, wow. Those are 2 completely different things.
Yeah. You can't train horses anymore. Go do music. Well, the funny thing was when I was a teenager, I was torn between music and horses. Mm-hmm. And I went to preliminary year in university and was totally miserable. I'd sold all my horses and moved on. But then, at the end of that university year, I got on a bus and I was 17 because I'd done prelim year. And I went out to Alberta and I went out to the first ranch that was looking for a wrangler, which is somebody who manages horses, not cows.
Yeah.
And I became a wrangler and then I went on to be to work at Spruce Meadow Stables with the big Hanoverian jumpers and the show horses. I've worked with a lot of different kinds of horses, you know, stockyard ponies and thoroughbreds and everything in between. And I never thought I'd give it up, but I had a really catastrophic accident. And the only thing I knew how to do mm-hmm. when I couldn't ride anymore was I played clarinet in the Civic Symphony and I played guitar at the church. So I, and you know something? Mm-hmm. That same year that I was looking to go back to university, Cindy, they brought in the music therapy program.
Really?
And I'd been with the symphony and I'd done performance and I'm like, I don't want to do performance anymore. I'm tired of traveling, you know? So I was lucky enough, like that was my guardian angel.
So you went back to school?
I went back to school. I had two children. I was a single mom and it took me 5 years to get through the degree, but mm-hmm. I got it.
You did it.
Then, this is funny. I researched the music therapist in Canada because you have to do 1,000 clinical hours internship.
Yeah.
And the one I found that I thought was the best one in Canada was in Alberta. So I went back to Alberta. I took my kids and away we went in a U-Haul truck tow in the car. And I did my placement out there. And that's when I ended up being like, she asked me to stay on in private practice with her and help her run her business. So we shared a client base and we were good together. We could cover each other and we did a lot of Christmas parties together. And
this is amazing.
She was like my soulmate. Yeah, such a great lady. And so.
How long did you live there for then?
4 years.
4 years. Yeah. And then you came back.
Yeah, my parents were here. You know, yeah. I always knew I'd come back. Like I was never going to leave them. You know, I knew I wanted to be here for their older age. So. Yes. It was just an adventure. And I sat the kids down and said, hey, I'm thinking of Calgary. Do you want to just pack up and go and have an adventure? And they said, yeah, Mom, let's go.
How was the transition for your kids to come back here? Was it okay?
They
didn't want to leave.
They were okay once, you know, they got here. I mean, they're fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they really loved it out there. You know?
Are they still living in Windsor now?
Yeah.
Okay, so they didn't end up going back.
My son is like a 2-minute walk from me, so yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Do they help with your husband's
dad's
kids?
They work.
Oh, I know.
I don't, yeah. It's, you know, they work full time and, you know, it's okay. You know, we're especially now with dad being where mm-hmm. he is. So, but they do see him a lot, so.
With all of, you know, the caring for others, for your husband, for your dad, what are you doing to care for yourself?
I do a lot, really. Like, you can't plan it mm-hmm. because I never know when I can leave Michael, if I can leave Michael. I never know what kind of mood he's going to be in. I definitely can't plan to go anywhere without him at my side, mm-hmm. you know. So a lot of things have been taken away that way. But I spike. I cycle, and the nice thing about the bike is you don't have to schedule it. It's right there, you know. I read, I play instruments, you know. There's so many things I love to do. And I have a big balcony on the riverfront. I can sit out there and read my book. But I cycle a lot. That's really been, I think, my biggest therapy. Mm-hmm. It's been getting out and riding.
What are the main benefits you see from bike riding?
Well, I have a ton of energy and nowhere to put it when I have to be a caregiver at home.
Yeah.
You know. So the exercise, everyone knows how important that is for mental health. I love being outside. I was born to be outside. And I love to see things. I love to see gardens and different trees and, you know, different dogs walking by and grandmas with their kids. And I just like to see, like, go out. People say to me after I retired, what do you do now? I said, I go out and look at stuff. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I remember the first time I met you was 4 years ago, I believe, when you rode the bike with Dawn.
Oh, yeah.
For the fundraiser.
Yeah.
That's the first time I met you. And then we're meeting again 4 years later, which is pretty cool, honestly.
Yeah, small world.
You said your husband and your dad are two completely different people, but they're both very, you know, heartwarming, kind and loving people. What are some main, communication strategies that you have to use differently with the both of them?
Nothing really. They're both kind of on the same place. If you say more than one idea,
mm-hmm.
if you have more than two thoughts in a sentence, you've lost them.
Yep.
So they're sort of at that point where you have to give them little bits of information if you want them to digest it and give them time to take that in.
Yeah.
And even sometimes with my husband, Because his is different. His whole frontal lobe is involved in his dementia, the entire thing, which is not normal. You know, there's different parts of the brain affected for different people. He doesn't know how to reason. If he has something in each hand, he doesn't know how to figure out how he's going to open the door. Like, oh, I have to put this down. No, that his logic is gone. Skills, yeah. So, but my dad is, and he doesn't notice anything around him. You can be trying to pick up a car and he won't think to offer you help or anything because it doesn't occur to him. And my dad, if you even try to open up a door, he's reaching for the doorknob. Let me do that for you, you know?
Yeah.
So they're different in those ways and their behaviors. But as far as what my approach to them is, it's pretty much the same. Keeping things simple. We use a lot of body language.
Yeah.
We use a lot of just facial expressions. I'm really lucky in the fact that we had music all my life. Mm-hmm. My dad and mom taught me to sing when I was just a little wee girl. And we always had music in the home. And my dad and I have been singing buddies doing big events like funerals and weddings. And
you guys did that together before his diagnosis?
All the time. What? Yeah, ever since I was maybe 18.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and... So we've got that, and that's a huge blessing. And that's one thing that I would tell people, if you have, as soon as you're diagnosed or a loved one is diagnosed, people in your family can start laying the groundwork for down the road when you've lost your ability to communicate verbally.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing is the last thing to go of our senses.
Mm-hmm.
So even up until your last breath, that's one tool your family has at their disposal, is that they can use music or voice, or, you know, even if the person with dementia doesn't know their family members anymore, they know a familiar tone. They know a loving, familiar tone. They'll always be affected by music that they used to like. So you can start laying groundwork early when you get that early diagnosis. And it's a hard thing to think about at the time with an early diagnosis, because it's pretty tough. Even with all my experience with dementia, when it was in my living room, and it was my husband who was disappearing into that void, I had a much harder time than I thought I would have if someone like that close to me had dementia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was surprised at how hard it was for me, even though I'd seen so many people go through it.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so happy that you took advantage of the support groups, because you're talking to other people that are going through the same thing as you and that know how you're feeling, even though their situation might not be the same, right? So I'm really happy you did that for yourself.
Me too. And the other thing too is, of course, I come into it after all that experience thinking that I'm a know-it-all and I can handle this. No problem. I'm fine. You know, I know what I'm doing. I've seen this a million times. No, I didn't know it all.
Yeah.
Far from it.
To add on to this conversation, what are some tips and tricks that you have for new care partners? So care partners that are going through this in the beginning stages.
Well, the first one primarily would be to lay some groundwork for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that includes not just getting into a support group, and, you know, getting involved with, find out what's going on here at the Alzheimer's Society, you know,
mm-hmm.
find out what other resources are out there that you can use, because there's quite a bit more than you would think. And they all are just fantastic. I mean, I have two whole days to myself because of you guys, you know. The other thing is to cut yourself some slack, because you're gonna make mistakes. You're gonna have days when you're maybe a little short-tempered or don't have the patience that you expect from yourself. You're gonna do that. You're gonna make mistakes. You're gonna have rough days. You're gonna cry. You're gonna be angry. And don't forget your resources. I mean, there was a long time there early on when I kept forgetting that I could phone. There's somebody here that she had said I could call her when I need her, and I was always afraid to do that. I didn't want to be a nuisance, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I realized that's not going to help, you know, Michael. It's not going to help the people I'm taking care of. And she really did want to be there for me. So, you know, you have to cut yourself some slack, you know, give yourself some leeway, allow yourself to ask for help. We're not supposed to do that in this world today, but yeah, it's, you need it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can't do it all by yourself.
Yeah. And you guys are here for that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a great resource. We need to use it.
Well, with everything going on in your life and how busy it is, you did something very, very cool and interesting. You bought a trailer and you did what with it?
I didn't know how he'd take to it because he'd never been in one. And I thought, no, I'm just going to have to go out and do it, you know. So I bought a motorhome and he loves it. And I have to do things to it so that when we go places and we're in an RV park, he can look at it and see it's us.
Yep.
And I do silly things to the outside of it because that's what makes an impression on him.
Mm-hmm.
And, people get a kick out of it. But it's been really good. You know, we went to Florida. He wanted to go to Lakeland and see the Tiger training games again. Like, he was sort of living back in those days when he was in his
20s. And you did that for him.
And so I thought, well, let's try, you know. So it took me 5 days to drive there. But it was a good trip.
And you did all, obviously you did all the driving.
Oh, yeah. He can't do anything.
You unload the RV. You set it all up by yourself.
Oh, yeah. He can't help with anything anymore. In fact, you can't, if you ask him to help with something, you're probably going to have a problem because he can't think things through and, mm-hmm. and you know, you just going to have an accident or something. We spent a whole month at a wildlife sanctuary down there.
Wow.
It was incredible. Yeah.
Lisa,
beautiful.
This is amazing. When I heard about this, I'm like, she did all that driving by herself. Setting up and taking down is so much work too for an RV.
Yeah,
it
is.
Backing up into the spot is a lot.
Yeah, you should, like, okay. The first day we got there, I made sure that all of the taps were off. I go outside to hook up the water. I'm keeping Michael in sight because mm-hmm. you can't let him out of your sight.
Yeah.
And so I lost sight of him for a moment just as I was turning on all the taps. And then I'm looking around and okay, where'd he go? And I run around the thing. Anyway, he'd gone inside and then gone back out of the RV mm-hmm. and he had turned on the bathroom taps thinking he was helping me.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'm going to check this for Lisa, you know? And so the sink had filled, overflowed. It blew the faucet thing there.
Yeah.
And then it blew out the whole thing and the fuse was gone. And then I couldn't just click renew it because it said on it, no, you have to replace it now.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to get somebody come out a couple days later and fix that. So we went a couple days with no power to the outlet. So no coffee, no this, no that. And all because I took my eyes off him for a moment, you know, when I was doing setup. So it's mm-hmm. not just the setup, but you have to make sure that he's safe, mm-hmm. you know. And I goofed up.
On a month out there, you're doing it. You did it.
The first day there, setting up, and I have a flood and an outage. And I, you know what? I laughed. I'm like, I can't believe you just did that. You know, like I didn't say that to him.
Yeah.
But it's unbelievable. You think you can stay ahead of somebody that has a dementia? You can't. No.
Yeah.
And you're fooling yourself if you think you can. So just do your best.
And it was the first day and you stayed and you did it.
Yeah, yeah.
Drove back home.
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually a great trip. It was awesome.
I know when I was trying to get a hold of you, Cheryl was like, she's traveling across the states right now.
We
might not get her.
We didn't have a return date.
Yeah.
We ended up being down there for, I think it was 7 weeks, but I'm not sure.
Wow.
It might have been. Yeah. But the only reason I came home was because it got so hot and he wasn't enjoying it. After a couple of days of that, we just went up to Kentucky and Tennessee and spent some time bumming around there for a while.
Wow. So did you check like for RV parks? Did you guys stay in hotels for your stops or?
We, on the way down, we stayed in hotels because it wasn't dewinterized yet. There's no water in it.
Okay.
So when I got down there, I dewinterized it myself at the park. And then on the way back, we just winged it at RV parks. But then we spent the last couple days at a hotel because I got like an oil change and all that done mm-hmm. to it. And then I got winterized again before bringing it back because we were driving back into snow, right?
This is incredible. Are you watching like YouTube videos on how to do this stuff? Or are you just learning. I don't know how you're doing this.
I ask questions. Good. You don't have to know a lot. You just have to know a lot of people like that. Yeah. Like, how do you do this? I have like my mechanic and my leisure trailer and places here that, in fact, the guy, one of the head guys there, he gave me his cell phone number and said, anytime, Lisa, you need, you know, some help, just call me. And it doesn't matter if I'm home or whatever, I'll, you know, I'll help you. So, because he knows I'm up for. And you know, the other thing is, everywhere we go in these RV parks, people can see right away what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
And they see Michael and, you know, me running around doing all this stuff. Before you know it, like the day after we got to this place, there were men dropping by, a lot of senior gentlemen. Here's my phone number. If you need help, you call me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm right over here. Or really, really
good. There were some good really good people. Yeah. That's amazing.
So they really reach out to you when you need it. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty cool lesson.
I love that. I want you to touch more on the music therapy
aspect
of your life. So whatever you feel like you want to share with us, I think a lot of people would really benefit from hearing about it.
Music is processed globally in the brain. And they know that because in scans and whatnot of the brain, when you're listening to music, pretty much the entire brain is active during that part. And it activates. So because it activates everything, it's like some of the most diverse and complex parts of the brain are being activated. So if one part of the brain is compromised by Alzheimer's or dementia, then the rest of the brain can compensate for that. Mm-hmm. It's processed like through the thalamus, which is responsible for, I'm just going to mention some of the parts of the brain and what they're associated with, just to really bring home the idea of what people are having activated in their brain when they listen to music. So the thalamus expressing emotions in response to a stimuli, and the amygdala, which is part of the brain associated with experiencing emotions. Mm-hmm. And because of those two facts, so you have music memories that you might not even know that you have. Mm-hmm. In fact, you probably don't, but they never go away. So even if you don't remember that you were married, had kids, whatever, if you hear your wedding song or a song that would evoke emotion, that's a musical memory. And it will never go away. So if you know, and that's another way you lay groundwork with early onset, there's a lot of people I talked to that didn't know what kind of music their parents listened to when they were younger. Find out.
Yeah.
Find out what they liked, what they did, what they danced to, you know, like that kind of thing. If they sang, what did they sing? Those musical memories you can use when people don't have communication skills anymore. So the emotions associated with those memories stay on. That's very important to know. The limbic system as well is activated, including the motor system. So for example, I know everyone's had this happen to them. You're sitting somewhere, music comes on, you start tapping your foot or moving to the music, you don't, and then you realize you're doing it.
Yeah.
So your body's in motion responding to that, to the motor system that was activated when you're not even aware of it, right? So you don't need awareness. You get a dopamine release listening to music. And with dopamine in the brain, it's not, I know everybody knows it's associated with pleasure, but it's also associated with increasing focus and stimulating interest, which is very fascinating to me because as soon as you put music on and you're listening to it, it enables a person more prone to pay attention to what's in front of them, to focus on it, and to get pleasure out of it. Mm. So music does all that, which, you know, a lot of people are not aware of. Basically, use a lot of music, use it as much as you can, and make sure you're using the right kind of music. That's another early tip for people that have a early diagnosis. And they say, like, use it or lose it, which pertains, they usually are talking about the brain, right? Or muscles or some kind of muscle like the brain. The brain is very efficient. It's only going to use a pathway that is being used. When you're listening to music, there's some very complex systems that are being used in your brain. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're using them, those, it's like a road. If the road is used every day, it stays open. But if it isn't used hardly ever, then it's gonna fall into nature takes over kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It might crumble a little bit, but it'll stay open. Your brain is like that.
Yeah.
Because it's such an efficient organ. And I always knew working with people that have a dementia, We're not going to cure this.
Yep.
Okay. But we can maintain quality of life and maximum enjoyment from life. If you can maintain the pathways in the brain to help them do that, you know, right up until the end, then that's a good step for them and for you.
I agree.
Music activates so many regions and networks in the brain. The only situation that where you can activate so many brain networks all at once is when you're involved in a social activity. So those two things, right?
Yep.
The cerebellum. I want to mention the cerebellum because music is processed through that as well, of course. And people are able to coordinate their movements and keep kind of a warehouse of physical memories. That's another thing that really is maintained for a long time. So, for example, when I worked in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
I had a little lady. She was 93. She was in a wheelchair. She had about 14 kids. She didn't know them anymore. She was blind. And somebody had told me she used to play the piano. And so a few days after she got settled in on my floor, I thought, So I wheeled her up to the piano, and she just looks so frail, mm-hmm. and she looks like she's lost. And wow, within about 2 minutes, it sounded like you were in some bar, with a player piano going full tilt. Like this woman was up and down that keyboard, and that is the cerebellum at mm-hmm. work. She had, you know, those physical memories. They don't go away. Mm-hmm. And because she had the ability in her fingers, she was able to do that. So,
and if somebody knew that about her before you, you know, then she could have been playing at the piano this whole time while living there.
Yeah. And she her family told me she used to play the piano and she was really good. And somebody looked at her and mm-hmm. said, oh, she wouldn't be able to do that now.
Oh.
Right. So never assume.
And we just got to try.
Yeah, that's another. There you go. There's another
never
one.
Never assume.
Yeah. The hippocampus, which is a very critical part of your brain. It's the part that retrieves memories. They've noticed that when Alzheimer's is diagnosed, it's often the hippocampus that is being affected first.
Yeah.
So that's maybe why that's one of the first things that starts to suffer, you know, as far as the disease manifesting itself.
Yeah. So. I'm happy you made notes, because this is the first time that I'm doing musical therapy on the podcast, and a lot of people still don't realize how important music is and socialization, all those things. So I'm really, really happy that you touched on all the points you wanted to touch on.
Thank you.
It's very important for our listeners to learn about this. So Lisa's just going to do a little demonstration about what she does with some of her clients.
I just want to touch base with some of the techniques that I've used in music therapy and how they can be used by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
This is my crutch, but you don't need a guitar. I mean, if you play, that's fine, but you don't need a guitar. This is just to give people some ideas. So there's one that we call lining out.
Mm-hmm.
Lining out is when somebody is reluctant to sing along with you or to involve. Or in one case, I had a man who had a stroke, had had speech therapy for several months, no results. The reason why he wasn't getting results was because he was depressed,
mm-hmm.
which is very common in stroke victims because of the huge change in their lifestyle. Somebody recommended music therapy, thank goodness. So the nice thing about music therapy is that people don't know they're getting therapy. All he sees is this girl sitting in front of him with his guitar. And, you know, I say, well, you know, let's do some songs. And because he wasn't responding to me, I had to use trial and error. I would just sit and play songs for him, watch his face, mm-hmm. which once perked him up. Then I knew, you know, a list of songs that he would respond to. So that's where you start. Because I knew he wasn't making any noise at all, and I wanted to keep it simple for him. So I used a song that only has the words doo-dah in it.
Okay.
So, and then lining out is when you leave the end of the sentence off the song, because people have an innate desire or need for things to be finished.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So you're playing on their human nature and on their investment in the music. So it's the song he likes, and he's listening, and he likes to hear me sing, and he likes to be, you know, in these music sessions. So when I go, Cap Town Races, sing this song, And then I lean in a little bit. And I don't sing, but I might give him like the, if he doesn't respond, I go, and I wait, I'm looking at him, making eye contact. He did it.
Wow.
So then, Camptown races five miles long. Oh. He does it.
Do-da-day.
So that's my springboard. And I do that over and over and over, which you can do with clients that have a stroke or dementia, because they're caught up in the moment. It's mm-hmm. not a repetition for them. It's eye contact. It's connectedness, yeah. you know, and they get invested in that. And now they're working with you. So within about a month, he was singing half sentences. And within 2 months, he was having conversations with his wife again.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he doesn't even know that I'm doing therapy, you know, or that we're making progress. So that's one really, really effective way of getting results. Another one is lifting. Say you have someone that's a little bit in a melancholy mood and you want to just play for them for a little while and get them out of it, right? Mm-hmm. You just do one song you know they really like. And this is often I do with clients that can't talk or sing.
Okay.
Say you do You Are My Sunshine. And every time you do a verse of it, you're going up one key. So you're elevating, elevating, elevating. So just as an example, please don't take my sunshine away. You are my sun. So now we're up higher.
Please don't take my sunshine away.
So every time I'm doing the verse, I'm going higher and higher, and it has an effect.
Mm-hmm.
The pilot project we did, I had the nurses at the home take the person's pulse before and after a 20-minute session. And on average, it went from, these were all non-communicating females that were in Jerry chairs.
Oh, wow.
Their pulse on average went from about a 92 down to about an 86. So that's effective based on, we did that for I think about 7 weeks. The other tip that you need to know with music is if you have someone who's really sad or mm-hmm. depressed and you think, oh, I'm going to put on some music for them. You don't want to put on a song like Sunshine, Lollipops, and Rainbows because right away they're disconnected from that happy little tune, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this sounds counterproductive, but the fact is if you put on something like I'll Never Smile Again, you just met them where they're at. That's what yeah. that term you hear, meet them where they're at. You know, music is like your tool. It's like a hammer to a carpenter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I go in there with the songs ready for whatever. You don't ever plan a session. You're ready for whatever happens
mm-hmm.
based on the individual needs. So you go in and you might start with that song. The next song is a little less sad, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe What a Wonderful World, which is kind of a melancholy, nice, mm-hmm. happy, sad song. And then work your way up. Take 20, 30 minutes to do it. And they've gone with you. You've taken them on a journey,
yeah.
you know, and it really does work. If you start to see someone's getting distracted, losing, you know, change tempo. Change pitch,
mm-hmm.
you know, just like even slow it down, speed it up, go back and forth, eye contact, you know, get them involved in that tempo change. I would do that with one of my residents where if he got distracted, I'd nudge him and I'd pull back and I'd slow down and I'd say, stay with me.
Yeah.
So he'd have to, you know, he would be drumming with me or something. That's another way that you can sort of connect with people with music. Tempo changes, like that's a big one. You can change the whole mood of a song with the tempo. Minor and major keys. Like if you're doing something, like here's an example of an E minor chord. Kind of moody, dark. And here's E major. It's got that little lift, you know. So the key change that you, or the key that you do it in makes a difference. D minor. A little bit dark. Major, lift.
Yeah.
See? And sometimes I'll be doing something in a minor key and I'll play most of it in a minor key, and then right at the end I'll play a major key to end the song with. And they always look, you know, people notice these things, right? Getting on in the dementia stage to maybe a point where the person is what we call pacing.
Mm.
Okay, so pacing when people are just walking.
Yep.
And they don't seem aware of what's around them. So when I am when I'm asked to work with someone like that, I walk behind them and I play to the rhythm of their walk.
Mm.
They ignore me for the first little while, just like they ignore everybody else. But then after a while, it catches their attention that they notice that the beat is, that they're walking to the beat. And they stop and they turn around and they look at me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Music therapy, just from listening to you, it's a lot of trial and error and patience and love. Thank you so much for showing us and
teaching us. Oh, my pleasure, Cindy. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show. I really hope that some of the ideas we've talked about here can help people in all stages of their journey, if they're a caregiver,
and I'm hoping
as well.
Some of our listeners can reach out to you as well.
That would be fine.
That's my goal.
Happy to hear from anybody if anyone has questions or anything. Yes, I'm here.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for taking the time out of your already busy schedule to do this podcast with me. I would love for us to finish this podcast with some rapid-fire questions. These 5 questions are random, and it will allow our audience to get to know you a little bit more. Can you answer these questions with one word or one sentence? And there are no wrong answers. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't have to sleep, what would you do with that extra time?
Spend more time with my kids and maybe play more instruments.
Okay. If you could only eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, pizza.
Mmm. What would your perfect Sunday look like?
After church, spending time with my kids, being outside, spending time with my dad and my husband.
This one is a perfect question for you. What could you give a 40-minute presentation on with absolutely no preparation?
Oh, horses, music therapy, dementia.
All the good things. What's the best piece of advice someone has ever given you?
My mom, I think, gave me the best advice that I've ever been given. She really taught me to stick to my convictions, blaze my own trail. And once I figured out the path I wanted to go on, don't let anything stop you.
Mm-hmm.
If you think you're doing the right thing, just do it.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Lisa. It was a pleasure speaking with you today. I hope our listeners have gained some insight on what it entails to be a care partner. Hey, listeners, my call to action for all of you, how can you help? Educate yourself and encourage others to do the same. Refer your circle of friends and family to our services, support our events and fundraising campaigns, and become a dementia-friendly community. Listen to new episodes on the last Friday of every month on our YouTube channel, Alzheimer Windsor, and don't forget to subscribe. Our podcast is also available on Spotify and Amazon Music. Help for today, hope for tomorrow, and remember, we are better together.